It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. President-elect Donald Trump campaigned for a second term, promising to deport millions of undocumented immigrants and make several forms of legal immigration to the United States more difficult.
Since Trump's victory, he's nominated immigration hardliners like immigration advisor Stephen Miller as his Homeland Security advisor and former Immigration and Customs Enforcement head Tom Homan as his border czar.
What could Trump's policies of mass deportation and curtailing immigration mean here in Wisconsin? Erin Barbato joins us now. She's director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Erin, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks so much for having me.
On Monday, Erin, President-elect Trump confirmed online that he is likely to use a national emergency, potentially use the U.S. military in some capacity to enact mass deportations of undocumented immigrants. As you look at that plan and the people you work with, what do you see there? What are your concerns?
I mean, there are many concerns. I think the fear that it's creating within our communities is terrifying and also detrimental to almost everyone in our communities, not just the people that are fearing deportation. But I think we look at it and wonder how we are going to ensure that people's rights are not violated and that families are not separated unjustly under our system because of the lack of resources and pro bono legal representation that's available for our undocumented community.
And working with the Immigrant Justice Clinic, what concerns are you hearing from some of the people you've worked with here in Wisconsin and others?
You know, I hear concerns from everyone, from the people that we are representing who are seeking asylum, from the people that we meet with and consult with who are in immigrant detention in Dodge, as well as people that have their green cards or have even employment-based non-immigrant visas. Everyone is terrified that they will become a target of these policies. And so it's creating a lot of unnecessary fear for people that already have their green cards or already have the right to be here, but they know that their lives are also going to become very difficult. And the barriers they're going to face in their immigration process have also become so much larger.
A lot of the focus has been on immigrants who are undocumented, have no legal status in the United States. I want to look at some other categories here. Stephen Miller, a top Trump advisor on immigration, has said that the administration would turbocharge something they did in the first administration, a denaturalization process. So people who have been through the legal immigration process, achieved citizenship, their plan would start reviewing some of those citizenship procedures and unnaturalizing people. What are you watching for there?
The process of denaturalizing someone who has already become a U.S. citizen and gone through all of the vetting and the difficult work that it takes to take that oath of allegiance to the United States, I think it's another manner in which to cause fear because many people who have immigrated to the United States, once they have citizenship, they know that that can't be taken away through the naturalization process. And now we're bringing someone in who is invoking fear and causing more complications for people that have truly part of our society and have been here for a long time.
Can you talk just briefly about the length of that naturalization process? People talk about, you know, doing it the right way and standing in line and things like that. What goes into that legal immigration process that ends in citizenship?
In reality, most people do not even qualify to get in line to become a citizen. And once you do qualify for a line, sometimes that line is going to be 15 to 20 years long in order to just get in that line. But normally what happens if someone is eligible to get their lawful permanent resident status, if it's through marriage, they generally have to wait for 3 years. Married to a U.S. citizen, 3 years to apply for naturalization. Otherwise, people are waiting at least 5 years to apply for naturalization. And at that point, you're taking a test, you're taking an oath, you're also having your entire life reviewed by the immigration system, not just your criminal background, but also your taxes and your child support and all of the trips you've taken in and outside of the United States. It is not an easy process for people. And it also tests ability to speak English as well as understanding of the government and the history of the United States. So it takes years, many years.
Then there are asylum seekers, people who present themselves either at a point of entry to the United States or across the border in another place and make an asylum claim. That is sort of a very tentative legal status in the United States because the system is overwhelmed. People often stay in the United States during that very lengthy asylum process. What are you watching for to change in their situation under the Trump administration next year?
The asylum system was definitely torn apart during the first Trump administration, but it was torn apart additionally under the Biden administration. So the number of people that even will qualify to apply for asylum has decreased due to policies that have been put in place on the southern border. So the part that I'm really focusing on is ensuring that people will still have the right to seek asylum under our laws, and whether that's being hindered by the policies at the southern border, or whether people who will be eligible for asylum can't seek asylum because they're in detention and they don't know their rights. So we're really trying to focus on how we can ensure that people have not only know their rights, but that they also have legal representation, because the consequences are truly dire for many of these people.
Something I've talked to you about in the past, Erin, in the last few years, we've seen a system, instead of having to cross the border into the United States or present at a point of entry to claim asylum, there was this online system that said, okay, you can apply and you don't have to make it into the United States and, you know, have the questions about the border crossing and things like that. What impact has that had? What are you hearing from the incoming administration about that?
So my understanding is, you know, that it's the CBP One app that people have been waiting to use in order to present themselves and apply for asylum in the U.S. My understanding is that it will be canceled. That process will be canceled. And so the people that, you know, some of the people I met with in Tijuana that were living at these shelters have been waiting for 8 months, 6 months in order to get their appointment. And if they don't get one before the administration changes, they will be unable to process in that manner. And I am not hopeful that there will be another manner for people to seek asylum on our southern border.
Then there's the notion of expedited removal. We've heard from some of the incoming Trump administration talking about that, the idea that people can be removed quickly without going through court procedures. How many people could that be affected by? Are there likely legal challenges to that approach?
Yeah, I mean, there will certainly be legal challenges to the approach. Expedited removal was created to help control our borders and expel or deport people who are not eligible to come into the United States. But there is a very large protection within that, and that is for people who have a fear of return to their home country. And so that is part of the expedited removal process, and people need to be aware of that, especially if the Trump administration attempts to expand the use of expedited removal, which will be challenged in court. I know that, but it may still go into effect for a certain amount of time. So people really need to be aware of what their rights are and have a good understanding of what whether they have a fear of return to their home country.
Now, for people in the United States, they have some kind of legal status. If they're worried in all of these categories, worried that that could be challenged by the incoming administration, what recommendations do you have for them to get ready, to have documents and things like that ready to roll?
I mean, I think people should rely on trusted resources such as Voces de la Frontera or Centro Hispano here in Madison to know their rights and prepare, whether it is having their documents to show how long they've been in the United States, whether there's any discretionary factors, you know, copies of their birth certificates of their U.S. citizen children, things like that. But there'll be more information coming out in the next, you know, month or two to help people ensure that they hopefully know their rights and are able to protect their families and avoid family separation when the law will provide that that relief.
And Erin, as we wrap up, you mentioned the available legal resources can be few and far between, already overtaxed for someone facing potentially deportation. Do you see efforts to ramp up pro bono or other legal work to help deal with what's going to come early next year?
There is a desire to certainly create to have more funding for attorneys to represent people who are facing deportation or other violations of their rights under the Trump administration. The very difficult part, Rob, is that there is no federal or state funding or city funding or county funding that is coming out in Wisconsin to help create these jobs where people can are very much needed. So there is a lack of legal representation that is available for people in Wisconsin who are facing deportation. And people do need to step up and realize that people are going to be deported without just cause and without knowing their rights if we don't have more qualified and trained immigration attorneys in this next administration.
Erin, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you again for having me.
For another perspective on the possible impacts of President-elect Donald Trump's immigration proposals here in Wisconsin, we bring in Christine Newman-Ortiz. She's executive director of Voces de la Frontera Action, a statewide membership-based immigrant and worker rights organization. Christine, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, you work obviously with a lot of people who could be potentially affected by policy changes in the coming administration. What kind of questions, what kind of concerns are you hearing from members of your organization and others you work with?
Because we've lived through this before, people can anticipate what we will experience. In 2016, in the first 100 days of the Trump administration, he took away enforcement priorities that the immigrant rights movement had won, so that only if you had committed a serious crime were you deportable. And it made, 11 million people, regardless of, their history, their family ties, how long they had been, living in the U.S., and made them deportable, under the threat of deportation. And so that's something that we expect to happen right away. He put in the architect of the family separation policy, and it's something that Trump has always celebrated and promised to bring back. And that is a very intentional and cruel policy of separating minors from their parents and deporting them without consideration about what's going to happen to them. And so one of the things that we are doing that we had done before is setting up regionally these Know Your Rights trainings so that people can, defend themselves in terms of not just like signing away or declaring away, their right to stay and to in this country, to have like kind of a legal chance, if you've been here for more than 10 years, if you have U.S., citizen spouse, U.S. citizen children, good moral character, all of those things, to at least have some kind of like fighting chance. And sadly and tragically, helping people with power of attorneys. So in the event parents are deported or put in detention and deportation proceedings, that their minor children will not be like stranded at school with no one to pick them up. So it's that's kind of the most immediate thing that we are doing and what people need to have in place.
During the campaign and now the transition, President-elect Trump and some of his key appointees or expected appointees as immigration-related officials have used phrases like a mass deportation, talked about workplace raids, expedited removal, where certain legal procedures might be circumvented. Do you see places where this might be different and maybe more drastic than happened in the first Trump term?
I think that, we did witness, the largest deportations I remember in the lead up to the 2022 gubernatorial elections that happened throughout the state of Wisconsin. And I do believe that there's going to be an effort to see what they can get away with. This is why the Know Your Rights trainings are so important. So, for example, in one case in Madison, and this was back in 2022, one father who had come to the Know Your Rights trainings knew that when he was in detention that he should not sign a document, even though the officials were telling him him and other fathers who were in detention, this is what you sign so that you can get a attorney to represent you, which was a lie. You can't lie to them, but they can lie to you and threaten you and scare you. And so he did not. He eventually, we were able to, you know, with supporting his family, you know, we were able to eventually be reunited. But the other fathers in detention who did sign did end up in deportation. There was another case of a pastor in Racine. She was from Colombia. Again, someone with an excellent record who had come to the U.S. fleeing the cartels because of the religious school that she ran and not wanting to corroborate with cartels. You know, she and her whole family was put in deportation, and she's, you know, the community really, especially the community of faith, really organized quickly around her. And while we were able to prevent the deportation of her daughter, who was a DACA recipient, and obviously kept her and her, the DACA recipients, who's an adult, her daughter, were able to stay united in the U.S., they did move very quickly to deport them as resistance was growing and a public opposition. So I would say there has to be a very, very strong network of people of conscience who are going to stand in solidarity with those immigrant workers and their families who are going to be targeted in this very cruel circus.
You mentioned immigrants and workers in particular, and at least some Trump likely officials in the next administration have talked about a focus on workplace raids in particular in looking for people to deport. What thoughts do you have for people, for immigrants working in Wisconsin, either undocumented or maybe here seeking asylum but not having a full legal status yet? What are you watching for?
Immigrants are a very important part of our economy. 70% of the undocumented workforce in the dairy industry, the signature industry of Wisconsin, that's undocumented workers who are there. And that, you know, very large numbers in agriculture, you know, meat packing, but also in lots of other jobs, hotels, restaurants, construction, factories. You know, this is a very important workforce that has actually been helping the economy. To do that is going to shake up the economy.
We'll leave it there. Christine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Christine Newman-Ortiz is the executive director of Voces de la Frontera Action, a statewide membership-based immigrant and worker rights organization. Earlier, we heard from Aaron Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. You can stay on top of all the latest news with Wisconsin Public Radio's newsletters. Get daily updates with WPR News headlines. Plus, check out weekly essays from the newsletter from To the Best of Our Knowledge, latest features from Wisconsin Life, and go behind the scenes at WPR with the Radio Waves newsletter. You can sign up for any or all of those newsletters. Head over to WPR.org/newsletter. That's WPR.org/newsletter.